welcome, and thank you for stopping by. I'm Henrik Palmgren from RedIcePatients.com. We are in the last week of January already. Unbelievable. We're trying to finalize a few updates and some new things, and it seems there isn't enough time in the day. But we are getting there, nice and easy. Well, today we're going to kind of join two seemingly disconnected worlds, conspiracy and the alt-right. Now, I don't think they're separate or contradictory at all. I think they both make sense if you lay the puzzle in the right way. But of course, I'm biased because this is kind of the way I've pieced things together. But you know, the very same elite that are trying to replace us in our own countries and then deny that it's happening is also trying to have us stop being biased. So that tells me we should be more biased and also intolerant. Ha! Take that, SJWs who are into conspiracy. But, in all seriousness, we are going to begin to speak about conspiracy, and in particular the hostile elites that are doing all this stuff to us that we've been talking about for such a long time, and then later tie in how the alt-right sits with all of that. Andy Nowicki is our guest. He's the assistant editor of alternativeright.blogspot.com and author of several books, including The Columbine Pilgrim, Heart Killer, Confessions of a Would-Be Wanker, Considering Suicide, and Notes Before Death. We are specifically going to talk about the ruthless, cold-blooded, patently reptilian nature of the ruling class. He's written a book on it called Conspiracy, Compliance, Control, and Defiance. We are going to talk about how they control us and keep us zombified through calculated campaigns of manipulation, bribery, and sheer psychological terror, and tie in events like 9/11 and Sandy Hook, and look more at how they've been used as opposed to the execution of the events themselves. We're going to begin to talk about the Franklin scandal and some of the issues that kind of set off Andy on this path. I hope you enjoy the discussion. Welcome, Andy. Thank you so much for coming back to us here at Red Ice Radio. Always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, Henrik, it's a pleasure to be on again. I really do appreciate it.
You bet. Well, we have some good stuff to get into today. You have a new book coming out, Conspiracy, Compliance, Control, and Defiance. I guess is it a working title, or is that the final one you're going to go with?
That's the title that's on the book, and the book has been released. It's available on Amazon right now in Kindle or paperback.
Excellent. Okay, great. I'm glad to hear that. Didn't know if it was just for pre-release so far, but yeah, that's awesome. Let's talk a bit about that. I mean, conspiracy is a good old Red Ice territory subject, if you will. We've spoken about this over many years now. We're coming up actually in April on the 10th year of doing Red Ice Radio, a decade.
Wow! Congratulations.
So, well, thank you. And it's just incredible how man, it's crazy. I don't know what to say about it. But anyway, conspiracies is a subject we've dedicated a lot of time to. I am personally a firm believer that people conspire in order to gain an advantage over others. In fact, I believe it's still, well, this is in America, the number one issue that people go to court over. I mean, in criminal law, a conspiracy is an agreement between two or more people to commit a crime, at some time in the future, basically. So it's not a weird thing, but somehow conspiracy, I guess conspiracy theory, we should say, has attracted this very kind of fringe element to it, that this is right. Something weird, it's strange and bizarre and all that, right?
Yeah, it's gotten that sort of connotative meaning, even if it's the denotative meaning of conspiracy isn't anything particularly weird or crazy or out there, fringy, X-Files-ish or anything like that. It's obtained in the last 3 or 4 decades, this connotation of, Twilight Zone kind of territory.
Yeah, I know. It certainly hasn't helped that we've actually had a lot of, I believe, real major conspiracies, such as 9/11, for example, and then we've had an adamant kind of counteractive measure by governments and authority to kind of, basically suppress these ideas. I think it's actually one of the first things that George W. Bush set out the gates was like, let's not kind of accept these crazy conspiracy theories. We have to go with the mainstream here, and whatever we are being told about this, that's going to be the truth. I mean, who believes that? Who realizes how corrupt the government is, right?
Yeah, and well, one of the points that I make in the book is I talk about how, you know, people, you know, on a low level, people get together and gossip and decide to do this or that or the other. You know, there's low level drama that takes place all the time between people. And so somehow the idea is that when it gets to the higher level, I don't know, that somehow, what do we think? Our leaders, our elected leaders, our appointed leaders are somehow more noble than that, and they just shed that part of themselves and, and become, you know, only interested in the common good. No, probably not. Probably they probably got to that position because, judging from the crop of candidates we've got out there now, you know, particularly the current front runner in the Democratic, candidacy for president, judging from, again, what's out there, what we see, tend to see year after year, the people who ascend to the top are probably the ones who are the more prone to ruthlessness and backstabbing and and so forth. And so if it happens on the lower levels, it certainly must happen on the higher levels as well.
Absolutely. I don't see how that not would be true. I mean, everyone knows that politicians lie, more or less. I mean, this is a standing joke. Magazines, papers, news, they always more or less write about it. I think if you ask any, you know, human in the Western world, they know that on some level, the politicians are corrupt and everything. But I think that when these big events happen, like 9/11 and many others as well, there is a tendency to seek oneself to authority to get answers of what really happened. But what's bizarre in that instant is that knowledge of this general level of that we know that politicians are corrupt go out the window, it seems like, and they abide by whatever, you know, the authority tell us, I think.
Which seems to be, again, just speaking observationally, because I'm not in the echelons of power. I don't know people in the echelons of power. But just from what I've observed and what I can gather, it would seem to me that that's probably part of the design. That, you know, and I don't take a position on the book. I know we're going to talk more about the book in a second, but I don't take a definitive position on 9/11 or on another incident that I mentioned is Sandy Hook. Those are in the American political scene. Those are maybe the big two. Major conspiracies, major things that people theorize over.
Or like
being
maybe JFK or something too.
Oh yeah, well there's JFK as well. That's going back a little.
The big one.
Maybe in the last 15 years, last two decades, let's say.
Yeah.
Those are the big two.
Yeah.
And when these things happen, and again, I don't take a definitive position on what exactly happened, because, you know, while it's interesting and I'm not dismissing the whole notion of investigating what really happened and coming up with ideas about what really happened. My whole purpose here in this book is more to stake out what I call a meta-conspiratorial position. One of the things I observe in the book is, regardless of, you know, you can be a flat out truther, you can believe in no planes or whatever else that the buildings were taken down by nukes or by the Dr. Judy Woods theory, or whatever else, or you can believe the official story about 19, radical Islamic hijackers from Saudi Arabia. But whatever the case is, we do know that it was exploited to the hilt. That whatever happened, again, and I have some ideas about what happened, and the point I make in the book is if you read between the lines, you can more or less see where I stand. But it's not so important where I stand, you know, because I'm just one guy. And, you know, I've looked at things and studied what I've studied, and, you know, I've come to certain conclusions, but I'm more interested in the truth than in, you know, trying to, I don't know, convince anybody about any particular position. But what I do think is important to note is the way in which these crises, these events are exploited instantly, and the kind of efficiency with which they are exploited in all, you know, the sophistication of the manner in which they are exploited in order to create more, essentially more statism, and to enhance the already totalitarian tendencies that that we have in our culture today. And you know that they do the, they have exploited incidences like these expertly, and I go into some detail about that in the book as I see it, how these kind of events have been used, and you know how we've been played, we being you know those who are not in power, the those who are the puppets of the puppet masters, if you will.
Right, right. Well, of course, I mean, as Rahm Emanuel famously quoted many times, said, never let a crisis go to waste. That's really the essence of what we're talking about here, that they're choosing to act on it. And again, whether the people who are acting on it knows something or not is also, to a certain degree, it's interesting and should be discussed, but it's irrelevant. It's the fact that they take that opportunity to gain more power, to push whatever, you know, policy they want, etc. That should be, I think, pretty much kind of understood by anyone. But let's back up a little bit first before we go more into this. Obviously, you're behind Alternative Right together with Colin Liddell, and I didn't know you were kind of into, you know, some of these topics that much, to be honest. I didn't know you were into, you know, conspiracy and stuff like that, of what would be more defined as being part of the alternative kind of truth-seeking, you know, community or whatever.
Right.
But tell us first. We can talk about that later, to how these marry and whatnot, if they even do that. But why did you want to write the book? What was kind of the motivating factor for you to get into this?
Well, I've been, it's funny you put it that way, I've been a sort of closet truther, quote unquote, for a while now. And when I say truther, I'm not, again, stating my affiliation with any particular stance, except to say that I think that more is going on than meets the eye, and I think that my general conviction is that the people who rule us are really, really evil people. And, you know, the more I've looked into things, the more I've come to that kind of conclusion. But I've, you know, to answer your question, I've been fascinated by questions of, you know, what's real and what isn't, what sort of things are we being told the truth about, and what sort of things are those in power in fact lying to us or deceiving us. I've been interested in those kind of questions, and I've looked into things. As a sort of branch of this, I've been a true crime enthusiast for a while. I mean, I'm addicted to true crime TV shows, and that's, you know, what's especially interesting to me is where you've got something, you know, you're presented with these facts, and you meet the person in question, and he's speaking for himself, the person who's accused of committing this crime. And the way it seems to me, you know, there's a very interesting psychology that accompanies the criminal mind at certain times. Now we sometimes tend to blow it out of proportion, or, you know, think that if a person committed a crime, he must be some terrible crime, like a murder or a mass murder or something like that. That he, it's almost like this, there's this kind of awe with which we view them, you know, as being some unique kind of, spectral being almost.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes, you know, it's, as the saying goes, the banality of evil that's the truth. I mean, often these are kind of silly, shallow people who do commit these horrendous crimes, but you're left kind of thinking, well, is that it? I mean, what am I missing here?
Right.
There's no there there. But so anyway, I've been interested in investigating things, and I guess you could say that something like 9/11 or Sandy Hook or the idea of the question of did these events actually happen the way that they are said to have happened? What's the evidence pro? What's the evidence against? You know, I've just ravenously looked into that, partly just because I find it, you know, interesting. And there's a sort of, you know, as I'm sure you can relate to this in some way, Henrik, since this is, you know, a subject that you're interested in as well, there can be a kind of thrill about suddenly see, you know, you read some bit of evidence or you see something presented, and it's like you're peeking behind the curtain, and
yeah,
suddenly it's like, whoa, this now I see something I'd never recognized before. And
right.
And so there's a kind of, in a sense, you know, an excitement to it, and you know, there's something addictive that can be addictive about it. But for my own perspective, I was looking into things, this, that, and the other. 9/11, of course, is a big one. Sandy Hook was another one, and you know, if anybody listening isn't aware of you know, the alternative theories about what took place at Sandy Hook, you know, all you have to do is Google it, and you'll have a handful of stuff.
Yeah.
You'll have a lot to
tons
to
of material. Yeah, tons of material out there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not all of it necessarily credible, but
of course not. No.
But a lot of stuff to look at. So I was, you know, going about my business, looking at, you know, again, furtively studying all this stuff, because it was, again, I've sort of been in the closet. I guess I'm sort of out of the closet now, but as far as, you know, believing that there's more than meets the eye. And there was something thrilling about it. But then at some point, I went down this particular avenue, and it took me to a very, very dark and disturbing place. Now, I mean, all of this is dark and disturbing. I mean, don't get me wrong. But I began studying the Franklin scandal.
I don't know
if you've heard of it.
Oh, of course, we've done shows on it. Absolutely incredible when you blow up that box, if you will, the Pandora's box of that story. Yeah.
And so for me it was studying that particular story and others like it, which we don't have to get into right now, but it was going down that particular route. And at first it was just sort of like, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, me, you know, ravenously tearing this material apart, you know, saying, this is, boy, I'm uncovering all kinds of stuff here. And, you know, there was this thrill to it. But then all of a sudden, and it happened all of a sudden, there was this severe psychic backlash that I experienced, where the supreme darkness of it all just hit me so hard that, I mean, and it was, I was thrown for a loop. I was like for about a month or so, a month or 6 weeks time, I was, you know, I was still able to, you know, live my life and go about my business, but it was haunting me and it wouldn't let me go. I was up at night sobbing, thinking about this, and I had never experienced that kind of depth of horror. And yeah, again, I'm not claiming that, I actually, you know, I'm not comparing what I felt to the actual suffering of actual victims. I mean, I want to make that very clear. I'm not trying to, you know, talk about, oh, poor me or anything, but it was almost as if I had experienced it personally myself. And it was, I mean, to call it, powerful, a powerful experience would be an understatement. I mean, it was too powerful. It was
right.
Like, for the first time, I don't know if you felt this way, Henrik, in your studies, but it was like, for the first time, I was like, no, I don't want this to be true. Please let this not be true.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's a healthy response to have your, there's an endless amount of material to consume, and it can drive you crazy to a certain extent if you don't pace yourself. And I think even today, considering how much material is available, you could, immerse yourself in this for years, probably.
Oh, yeah.
And I think when I kind of got into it was, shortly after 9/11, wasn't that much material available at that stage. Mm-hmm. I could still pace it, but it was still enough to upset my whole worldview, obviously, and turn everything upside down, and that can be quite challenging for sure.
Oh yeah, and so I think that was a formative experience. I mean, after, like I said, for a while there, I was really thrown for a loop, and there was a kind of recovery process that went with it, and I just kind of had to take a break from all that stuff for a little while, and then I had to sort it out and put it in some perspective in my mind, like how do I deal with this? Because I wanted it not to be true, but I couldn't convince myself that it wasn't true. It I'd still like for it not to be true, honestly. But you mean
how do I make use of it, right? Because it, consuming the material just for the sake of consuming it is kind of, it doesn't lead anywhere, basically, right?
Yeah,
so what do you do with it, right?
Where do I go from here?
Right.
I mean, how I felt, I guess, a need to try to do some good, in the middle of all of this. And I think that's kind of what ultimately spurs you on. It's something that healthy that comes from having this kind of reaction is, you can't compartmentalize anymore. It's too real, and if the realness of it doesn't destroy you, then you have to. And again, I don't want to overstate my reaction or I don't want to make it sound like my trauma, if you want to call it that, is similar to the trauma of the victims that were the victims in this particular scandal or any other incident where the powerful prey upon the weak.
Children.
Children.
Anything else. Yep.
It's that's just the lowest, as low as it gets.
Yeah,
I mean,
folks, by the way, sorry to interrupt you, but do go back into our archives, folks, and check out some of the shows we've done on the Franklin scandal if you want to hear more about that. It's just it's an incredible story, and I guess as well, I don't want to preface this for you, Andy. You can say what you want here, but this, of course, from my point of view, doesn't mean that one believes everything you hear. As you said, there is some crazy stuff out there, whatever. But I think you can learn enough these days to realize that there is much more going on than we are being told. And so all the material won't affect you the same. Obviously, you process things, you evaluate things, you put it up against other things, you go about this in a very rational way of trying to deduce what is the reality, what is the truth, etc. But at some point you realize that there's enough proof that there is more going on than we're being told, right?
Yeah. And in this case, part of it was honestly incomprehension, because I'm a highly imperfect human being, and I understand the temptation to do bad things. I understand rationalization. I can understand things like for example, and I'm Catholic, but the scandal in the Catholic Church where there were all these pederast priests who were preying upon young boys, basically homosexual pederast priests. They're being conveyed as if they were pedophiles, but the more accurate thing is they were preying upon, adolescent or just pre-adolescent, mostly boys. And this was happening in a certain sector of the priesthood, and it was being covered up because the church wanted, they rationalized it, but the church wanted to avoid a scandal. And they thought, well, we're doing so much good. The church, is doing good in so many other ways. We let's just tuck this away and let, let it just, keep it from public view.
Yeah.
And it ended up blowing up in their face, of course, as it should have.
Yeah, and also to add on to that, Andy, and I don't want to mean to take it off in a different direction, but it also means that at certain levels, the media, the establishment and everything are willing to expose something like this or go along
right.
with it because it benefits another agenda, the attack on Christianity and Western culture, all that kind of stuff, right? One thing leads to another and all that stuff, right?
Sure. That's all part of it. But, okay, the reason I'm bringing that up as something to compare this to is because there I can understand, wanting good PR. And, I can understand, of course I don't excuse it, but there's something human about the idea of, this misbehavior was going on, let's put a stop to this misbehavior and make sure it doesn't happen again. They didn't do a very good job of that, but that was the idea. But at the same time, let's not let this, get out there too much. I understand wanting PR, wanting good PR. What the Franklin scandal and other scandals like it, there's been a more recent one involving what's his name, Jeffrey Epstein. Which is a very, very similar sort of deal involving the weak and basically children being preyed upon by the perverted powerful.
Jimmy Savile and this whole connection with
Jimmy
the BBC, BBC cover helped to cover it up, and
so many other things like that, and. What terrified me about these kinds of things is what I see, it's like instead of the institutions just trying to cover it up for PR purposes, it seems like the institutions exist to help the powerful prey upon the weak in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a whole new level of evil that's harder to deal with. And so that kind of went into my writing of this book, which, I sort of have been working on and off for the last year or so, when I have the time, when I have the inspiration. And part of the conclusion I came to is, I made use of, metaphorical use of this notion of reptilians. And I know you've had David Icke on your show
sure.
a few times. And
yep.
He's famous for his theories about reptilians. Basically, I guess there's some question about whether it's metaphorical or not in his case, but my impression was that he seemed to actually promulgate the idea that they were actual beings from another dimension or from another planet or something like that. And that they are, so they're an actual different race with an actual different DNA who live among us and look like us, but aren't like us. And I found that useful. Not in the sense that I believe the literal interpretation of that notion, but metaphorically speaking, if these people live among us and do these kinds of things and are able to go about their daily routines and basically look human. Look recognizably human, and yet they are doing these things, committing these kinds of crimes against the innocent. Seemingly, with absolutely no remorse, and the whole. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm saying everybody who has power is like this, but.
Mm.
That they are out there. There's a sizable clack of them out there with a considerable amount of power. And, again, from the research I've done, I don't think that can really be denied. And so what is it about this particular type? It's sort of the question, what they ask people who have done something wrong. How do you sleep at night? What happens in the mind that enables this kind of person to do these kinds of things and yet go on again, it's what most of us would think of as sort of living a double life. for them, it's all one. I think it's, you know, they, for them, their deception, their furtiveness, and their perversity is one seamless garment with their exterior, presentation of being upstanding world leaders. And, you know, to that kind of mindset, there is no real contradiction. But to us, you know, to normal people, it's just really hard to comprehend. And so I wrote a little bit about in the book, and I've excerpted this a couple of places at Alternative Right under the title Our Reptilian Rulers and Our Reptilian Rulers Part 2, where I just explore a little bit what must be the mindset of these people who do these kinds of things and who live this kind of way.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things here. And I think, personally, I've become, I guess, less inclined to go the metaphysical route more recently for various reasons. I mean, I see advantages and problems with an approach that says, well, no, conspiracies doesn't happen, and then I can see a problem with those who only go that route as well, and get lost in that to a certain extent. I do believe there is a balance between these things, right? I think that if you go too much of the metaphysical route, if you will, or not metaphysical, but, you know, always looking at the conspiracy, there might be an attempt by these people to try to never kind of see reality for what it is. It can never just be kind of upfront and
exactly something what it seems.
Yeah, it can never be at face value. There has to be more behind it and all that stuff. And I've watched that many people over the years, and initially probably myself included when we got into this kind of these topics and whatnot. But it's this idea that it removes you from the urgency of the immediate, the physical that's happening right in front of your face of what stuff that you can do, right? Which I think prevents some people from acting on these things and changing things and try to, even if this means working politically and all this kind of stuff, you know. So I see that to a certain extent, I can see a benefit even from the point of view of our elite rulers to have us kind of lost and endlessly searching in conspiracies and never really kind of getting to it, if you see what I'm saying.
I do, yeah. And people actually, you know, like with Sandy Hook, for example, I don't want to get into any particulars here, but if you look into it, there are some things that some people say, well, look, this is obviously a fake. This picture here is obviously photoshopped of this family or that family. This grieving parent is obviously faking it. And so is that just part of the, you mean, you can chase your tail for days and days and months
sure.
like this. Like,
yeah. Yep.
Are they just putting these things here? And I mean, it's interesting to wonder, but like you say, it can be a trap also. And you know, at some point you've got to just, clear out the cobwebs or take a break and just, because there's only so much that we are going to be able to understand with the time that we're allotted here on Earth. And
yeah. How do we spend that time, you know, and what do we, what do we try to affect? What do we try to do? Yeah,
can't spend all your days on YouTube looking at conspiracy videos.
Exactly. And it's a fun, well, again, there can be useful things here. I mean, there can be amazing things you can learn about the world. So it's not that, but it can also, as you know, as we said here, take you away from the really important things. Because I guess on the flip side of that argument in terms of getting lost in conspiracies and just endlessly, roaming in those kinds of environments, it's also an aversion I've noticed by many people, in the alt-right, that I guess it's more of a disassociation. They think that some of these ideas are crazy, so we got to try to look good or rational, so let's not even talk about that or go there. But my point has always been, like, in terms of, you know, this particular area or this particular crowd that we're talking about, that, I mean, just to recognize the fact that they are trying to replace us in our own countries, and they're lying to us about it. The hostile elites that are running the show are performing, in my opinion, a slow genocide, and they're in fact denying that they're doing it. And they attack anybody vehemently who questions this or brings this to attention to people as a crazy conspiracy theory. So, you know, they do stuff like that. I mean, it's like they... box cutters didn't bring down Building 7. You know, there are things out there which you know, will show you a different you know, idea. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And so that was all, you know, and if I could just say maybe one more thing about how the motivation behind the book is, and this is kind of related to what I was mentioning before, but just in a different way. I've always been aware of, or I've for a long time been aware of being somebody who, I'm the sort of person who I don't like to be manipulated. That's one of the worst. I mean, I think that if I get the feeling somebody is trying to manipulate me, trying to get me to do something or feel some way in order to benefit themselves, I mean, that is something that I just absolutely cannot stand. And,
yeah.
I'm aware that this is, largely speaking, this is a manipulation game, what we're talking about here. And part of the, you know, it's pride. You know, I'm a prideful person. I like to think, you know, oh, what's working on the drooling masses? That doesn't work on me, man. I'm smarter than that. But you, I guess part of it is you have to become aware that, you know, like in that Clint Eastwood movie, that famous line, a man's got to know his limitations. And we all can be gotten to. That's the thing. I mean, and I think that's part of the whole, you know, what was behind the motivation for writing this book is thinking about the ways in which I've probably been manipulated without even knowing it. And, you know, how generally speaking, how one is never immune. And you've got to think again, you're talking about lower and, you know, things happen in the lower and, you know, the lower rung, and then in the, how they might be happening, how they might be playing out on the very, very highest rung, of things, you know, the tippy top of the pyramid. These people, you know, they have almost unlimited, these reptilians that I was talking about before have probably just about unlimited access. I'm not saying that they are omniscient, or omnipotent by any means. And they do make a lot of mistakes, I think. And, you know, they're not, you know, we shouldn't revere them in any way, but they do have access to, you know, probably endless resources. I mean, hell, they can create more money whenever they want. I mean, I know you've done stories before. This is, you know, getting more, I think more in the past. You did some shows about the black budget.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And that kind of fascinated me because, you know, wow, you know, and I mean, when they were, of course, you know, right before 9/11, how many trillions of dollars were missing from the Pentagon budget, right? That
yep.
Even Rumsfeld said that openly.
Yep.
That was the day before. And then years later, it was like it had multiplied even greater than that. So there's all this money out there that's being spent. You know, they can make more money whenever they want, and they can, you know, and so you've got to think that they have access to very sophisticated means of manipulating. And, that's also part of it, you know, is trying to sort out, to be, I guess, be, come to a sort of peace with the idea that, no, I'm not perfect, yes, I can be manipulated. Yes, they can probably get to me. And, you know, that's a place to start. You know, you've got to acknowledge that your pride will, you know, pride goeth before a fall. And you've got to understand that. And then that's a way you can better fight. You know, I think humility, it's not just a more attractive personality trait. It's also a more, somebody with proper humility knows it's harder to be attacked when you have proper humility, because you know what your weaknesses are and you acknowledge them. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's not all about this kind of macho bravado that I guess I'm more often drawn to or tempted towards. And so it all kind of goes together in this, you know, the personal and the political swirling together. And that's part of that was a large part of what motivated me to write Conspiracy, Compliance, Control, and Defiance.
Well, you know, there's a lot to it there. And I wanted to pick up on something you mentioned about them having, you know, basically endless, what it looks like, endless means at their disposal in terms of money and economy and all that kind of stuff. And what's funny about that, by the way, is that this is also like there's such a thing as like the official black budget, right? I mean, even Wired magazine writes about like how much, you know, they've spent on developing this new stealth plane, for example, and how much money is lost. I mean, this is, so that's like official. There's probably things that are underneath that we don't even know about.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
You know?
It's got to be.
Of course it is. But so it might, I think it also might look to us, if we followed their trail, if we're trying to play catch up, and if we see all the things that they have more or less succeeded in, I think it will look from our perspective that they are almost omnipotent in their ways and all that. But see, the flip side of that is we don't see everything that they have tried and failed to do, right? I mean, I think they try a myriad of different things that we are never even aware of. And so that alone, I think, should point out to us that they don't have everything under control. It isn't that simple. You know, there's a lot of things that can change along the way.
And they bungle things terribly, even in our view. I mean, one of the passages passages that I excerpt at the alt-right site, I talk about, for example, Larry Silverstein.
Right.
And
yeah.
His little gaffe where for reasons unknown, just thoughtlessness. I don't think he was, it was one of the deals where he was just the revelation of the method or anything like that. I think it was just like, oh yeah, we took the building down.
We decided to pull it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh really?
I mean, and if you look at his words, I mean, I don't see any other way of interpreting it, but
right.
That I know that people have tried to spin it one way or another. So there's the, you know, little things like that. I mean, these people are not superhuman. And I also, maybe a more amusing thing, but still I think significant. I cited when Al Gore, when he was running for president, you know, was asked what his accomplishments were, and he said, "Well, I did invent the internet."
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like, what in the world? What would make you think that saying something that people aren't going to notice this and make fun of you for claiming such a thing? And it's just like there's this disconnect, you know. But for them, it's not a disconnect. It's just they overreach, and then they just kind of have to correct. They have to play the PR game, which is, I think, really hateful to them because they want to, you know, just look like they're supreme and in control, but they're not.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, kind of early in the book about some of the modalities that they adopt to try to look, you know, human. And when I say that, I mean in the sense that they have compassion and they're like, you know, one of us, right? That they have at their disposal a kind of a whole slew of things that they can pull out to like make us believe that they are just one of us, right? And they have empathy they care, and you know, all this kind of stuff. It becomes like an art form almost to them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And to me, it's so transparent. I don't know if you saw the President Obama press conference where at just the right moment, he has tears coming out of his
eyes. Oh, God. Ugh. Yeah.
I mean,
God. Yeah.
By God. I mean, I don't know that anyone can fall for that. That
right.
Anyone could
right.
think, oh, yeah, this was just a spontaneous moment. Or he just gets choked up thinking because of those poor kids who died. I mean, it's unbelievable. In a way, it's funny. It's something we can laugh about, but it's related to all the other stuff that I was talking about that I think is very dark and disturbing, about this type of person that seems to manage to ascend to power in our culture as currently constituted.
Well, exactly. You know what? Let me say something else as well, that we don't personally know any of these people. All that we see, the way we experience these people is a highly polished, PR image that in some cases even been the speeches have been written with, you know, focus group studied words of what exactly to say to get what impact or the most impact and stuff like that. We mm-hmm. feel that, you know, these people are in our living rooms, right? They come on the TV. we develop a relationship, an association with them. And we think this is how they are, right? Without knowing that they have a probably whole different life. We don't know how they are in person and any of this. It becomes difficult for most people to grasp that as a possibility because they believe that they know these people, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's part of a very sophisticated con game. And again, I don't want to dismiss the idea that somebody, you know, with recognizably human traits could get into the echelons of power. Maybe that's what some people argue was the case with Kennedy.
Right.
And then they had to take care of him. It does seem to me that what you're saying is very true. It's like what actors do. You know, they emote and they express themselves in a particular way and they read their lines and people think, he looks like a good guy. You know, with President George W. Bush, it was like, yeah, he's the kind of guy I'd want to have a beer with. He seems like a regular guy. And I go, I don't know, Obama, he seems like a real smart guy and like he cares. I don't know. I mean, whatever they think, it's beyond me.
I know.
But, or, I mean, there's some script, I guess. There's some way in which they are meant to come across to us. And it's only part of the reality if it's any part of the reality. And like you're saying, after the cameras shut off, you know, it's probably something very different, very different story.
And those things have come out now and then too, right? The very kind of you know, bizarre behaviors and stuff. There's a really good, I guess it's a documentary, a video available called Spin, that kind of shows some of the politicians, behind the scenes. It's actually a guy who filmed the broadcast that went out on satellites while, for example, the networks runs a commercial. They actually broadcasted, they don't do that anymore, but they did for a while. They broadcasted the signal, to the station and this could be, intercepted. And so this guy recorded, for example, when there's a commercial on and what the politicians and other people were doing in the break. And that was quite revealing actually to see how they were like and what they said and what they did. Is just a bizarre world when you look at that.
Yeah, just a level of detachment and, a level of like, okay, I'm going to engage with this kind of, I'm going to emote in this particular way. Okay, now the camera's off. All right. So it's just like the curtain falls at the end of the play and, you stop acting however you're supposed to be acting and just, you know, become your real self.
Yeah, that's right. Or even like checked out, like Bill Clinton was like completely gone. I mean, okay, I guess there's elements we can rationalize here by saying they do, you know, the same interviews every day or whatever, and they're tired or, you know, whatever. There's other things going on here. But despite that, the point is we don't know these people and they have a highly polished image that they give to us for very specific reasons.
Yeah, we don't know them. We shouldn't trust them. We shouldn't think that they have our best, necessarily mean us well.
They don't. I mean, and that should be evident to anybody, especially within the alternative right, I'd say, who can see what a state our world, the Western world, has gotten to. And it's gotten to that point because most people have trusted the politicians. They believe what they say. They say things that might sound good. They might mean, it sounds like they mean well. But look at the damage and the destruction they have done. As they say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs.
Right.
Another
right.
metaphor.
Yep.
Yeah. And things are starting to change now. And, you know, people are, to use a tired metaphor, starting to, quote, wake up to a degree. And I just wonder how much of what's coming will also be co-opted by, I mean, there's a lot of enthusiasm here in America in alt-right circles for Donald Trump, and
right, yeah,
and you know, in France there's Le Pen and there's other nationalist politicians who are going against the grain, and they're probably, some of them, you know, are sincere people, but I just kind of wonder, I suspect, because I'm, I guess I'm just, you know, that's just the way I am. I just, it occurs to me to think, well, is this counter movement also going to get exploited? Has it already been exploited? Is it already being, you know, are we already being manipulated in new ways? I mean,
I believe so, Andy. Sorry to interrupt. But,
yes, sure.
I mean, we've spoken about this a lot on the show, and for me, it isn't really a mystery at all. The idea that the nationalist movement have some very questionable aspects to them is they're horrible on the question of Israel, you know, which takes, you know, a traditionally, like in Europe anyway, many countries have been, you know, more questionable when it comes to. Mm-hmm. To Israel and whatnot, but it's clear that this kind of the rise of the nationalist parties are in lockstep with Israel, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely an element within that that I think is seeking to kind of hijack the populist movement, the basic discontent about what's happening. So obviously we have to be careful. That's true. But see, at the same time, that shouldn't let us to a point where we don't try to engage and change something, right? We have to also.
Sure.
Do something, and again, so we're back to that point where I feel the conspiracy theorists might just kind of they fall short because they just say, it's just controlled, so who cares, mm-hmm. right? And then nothing gets done, right?
Yeah, it may be an excuse for apathy ultimately.
Exactly.
For inaction. Yeah, that's certainly a danger, and that's not what I'm recommending in the book either.
Right. No.
Just to make that clear.
Of course. Yeah. Well, I wanted to go in. I guess we could take a break here in a little bit, but I wanted to. We're going to talk about a little bit more about the book, where people can get it, and so forth. But later, I want to get into a bit more about, you know, kind of how you categorize some of these different types of people, or whatever that we deal with. We have the sociopath, we have the full-on psychopath. That's also something that's been picked up in recent years. Some research has been done on that, and then, of course, as you said, you focus on this, you know, what you call the reptilian, which is, of course, yeah. a metaphorical kind of explanation for what we're dealing with here, basically. And we can talk more about that in the second segment, Andy. But why don't we give out some of the details here first in terms of where people can get a copy of the book, tell us about your website, and you know, if there's something else you wanted to let our listeners know about before we wrap up the first hour.
Okay, well... The book, as I said before, is available on Amazon, Conspiracy, Compliance, Control, and Defiance by me, Andy Nowicki. You can purchase it on Kindle, in Kindle form, or in paperback for, I think a fairly reasonable price, I hope. People will conclude after they read it that it's a bargain, but I don't know. Hopefully. There are excerpts from the book that are posted at our website, Alternative Right. You can find that just by Googling Alternative Right, or go to alternative-right.blogspot.com. The titles are Our Reptilian Rulers and Our Reptilian Rulers Part 2, and another one, Slaves to Our Programming. These are the titles of the excerpts. Also on my SoundCloud page, which is... I should change the name of my SoundCloud page. Right now it's JNOW1101, but I think if you just type in Andy Nowicki SoundCloud, it'll take you there. And I've got some acting background. I've still got the acting bug from time to time, so I actually do some reading from those excerpts. So you can hear those excerpts in an audio form for Slaves to Our Programming and Our Reptilian Rulers. As well as other things, I've got a regular podcast that I do at that site. And let's see what else. I think that's it. So you can buy it on Amazon. I think that's the only place that it's available. It might be available at BarnesandNoble.com, but I'm not totally sure about that.
Well, we'll definitely have a link up to Amazon, and as you say, Andy, it's just the Kindle is just $3.99, and the paperback is only $5.95. So definitely, if you want to read more, pick up a copy, check it out. There's some really interesting ideas in here, and a lot of things that we've talked about so far that Andy really dives, you know, much deeper into, and you know, gives you a fuller picture, of course, of what we're talking about. But we'll pick up and talk more about this in the second segment here. We have much more to get into, so stay with us, folks. Stay with us, Andy. We'll be right back with a second. Right, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to continue in the second hour. Sign up for a membership with us to continue to listen. We have a jam-packed second hour coming up as we go deeper into the topic of the nature of the ruling elite and what their goals and objectives are, and how we can understand what drives them so that we ultimately can stop them. Now, in the second hour, Andy and I talk a bit about how both I and Red Eyes end up looking at many of the concepts that is touched upon by the alt-right and other, you know, surrounding movements and issues as well that we previously were, you know, not supposed to discuss within the conspiracy field, such as all the anti-white propaganda, population replacement, mass immigration, white genocide, and also, of course, World War II revisionism and the untouchable topic of the Holocaust and all that mess. We talk about how 9/11 has kind of hit a mainstream audience, more or less, and why there is an aversion within the alt-right to recognize a 9/11 conspiracy, which I completely understand, by the way. But I do believe there is another way out of it, so to speak, by simply recognizing the truth. And when you realize how it's being used against us, it makes perfect sense, at least to me. We get a bit paranoid as well and talk about how the elite is, you know, potentially seeking to use the rise of nationalism in Europe and how it might be controlled by these mostly pro-Zionist interests. Now, this is not news, of course, but it is something that should be discussed. But we also talk about how that position creates a more pacified and apolitical man that ends up thinking everything is controlled and never actually supports any political movement, even if it's heading in the right direction, even partially in the right direction. As we kick up, we begin to talk a bit more about the difference between the sociopath, the psychopath, and what Andy has dubbed the reptile. I think it's an interesting discussion and a valuable one that you shouldn't miss. The website is redicemembers.com. Go there to sign up or read more about our subscription. It's quick, easy. You get instant access, of course. Over 1,000 shows, videos, films, inside episodes, and much more coming. Upcoming guests, we have a show coming up with Jordan Maxwell speaking about conspiracies and also speaking about alt-right, we have a group roundtable show together with Richard Spencer, Greg Johnson, John Morgan, Ramsey Paul, and Daniel Friberg. That should be a lot of fun, so don't miss that one. Right, folks, we'll talk to you right after the break. Thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Sign up for a membership. We'll talk to you there.